Hello, America, to all of our listeners all around the world. You're listening to another edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host and host, Brandon Perkins. Joining as always is Chris Logie and Patrick Mifflin. Say hi to the people, gang.
Yo.
Hello.
Yeah, so this week's episode is going to be for October 28th, 2023. It is the last show of the month, just a couple days before Halloween. And let me tell you, it sucks working at a grocery store the Friday before a Halloween.
Oh, yes.
Fortunately, good thing is, I don't have to work the day before Halloween this year.
You're spared.
Yeah. The bad news is I have to work on the day of Halloween this year, which, you know, maybe people have already, you know, bulk buy their candy before that, or maybe they have. I don't know. I will see that evening.
You're going to find out.
Yeah, I'll find out. I will definitely find out. But man, it's just making me dread, you know, the day before Thanksgiving.
I can see that.
Or Thanksgiving itself. I don't even know. I might be working that day.
Oh.
I have no idea yet. I don't know that far away. But yeah, so, like I said, what do we got this week? Well, we still have the ongoing story about what's happening in Israel, but that story has mostly been overtaken because we had yet another mass shooting happen, this time in the state of Maine in Lewiston.
Stephen King country.
Yeah, and this one was particularly scary because the guy who was involved was like a U.S. Army reservist who actually managed to like be on the lam for like 2 days. He forced forced the entire town of Lewiston to lock itself down that entire time before they could find the guy. And they didn't even end up finding him and getting him. He actually committed suicide by gunshot before they showed up. But we'll be talking about all that and more. We also have the more or less end of the just absolute carnival that was the House of Representatives trying to agree on a new House Speaker. Spoiler alert, you're probably not going to like him. Yeah, we got a bunch of other stuff happening, including what happened to that statue of Robert Lee Lee that was the center of the whole Charlottesville riot. Some more news about the strike with the United Auto Workers. Scholastic Book Fairs. Those are big things here in the U.S. I don't know if they happen elsewhere, but here in the U.S. they are. They had some controversy recently. We'll be telling you why. And of course, Pat's definitely going to have something to say about this. The NHL, they had some controversy about Pride Tape. We'll be talking about that. We got all that and more on this week's episode of Let's Weekend, as long as, you know, all the entertainment stuff we typically talk about. But before we get there and get to all that stuff, as is tradition, we will be starting with Chris. Chris, what have you been doing this week?
Well, we enjoyed the last of the warm weather.
Yep.
We had a number,
as I like to call it.
No, it was mild. It was 70s a good bit of the week. So that was the last of any days where you could sweat a good amount just from the heat versus, you know, mm-hmm. wearing a lot of layers to keep yourself warm.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. So today was like the last of it was in the 50s. Mm-hmm. It was pretty nice out today. Though it rained this morning. Rain tomorrow, and then it'll be in like the 40s most of the week mm-hmm. coming up. So that's kind of the end of, any semblance of summer.
Mm-hmm.
As we're firmly in the fall where all the trees are shitting all the leaves off of their branches. Yep.
Oh yeah, they're basically covering everywhere where I am right now.
Yeah, every time I go out to my car, it's got a bunch of leaves on it, and I get to see how long it takes to get them to fall off when I drive.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, most of them don't need much force, but some find a way to get like under the wipers somehow when they're not even moving. So
yeah,
that's fun. But for things I've been doing, I've been watching a bunch of My Hero Academia.
Nice.
I'm in the mid-70s, I think, essentially where the, not the sports festival, but the school festival is happening,
mm-hmm.
where they get to decide the theme of whatever thing they're going to do in their classroom.
Yep.
Will they get back to
very common sort of the? It's like the in pretty much any type of story of this kind, they always have that one, you know, the school festival arc.
Yeah. Where they've been, a number of the students have been on a work study program of sorts where they've just gone through a very hellish time. And it's like, okay, they get a little bit of normalcy before, you know, other things start happening. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's been fun. I'm like right up before they start doing any of that stuff. So,
Yeah,
it's been really nice. So far, still liking it a lot. I am probably going to run through up to whatever they've got dubbed, which I think is in like the 120s.
Mm-hmm.
So Hulu had a weird thing where they had an episode in the fourth season labeled as it was the first episode because they labeled it as episode 9.
Mm-hmm.
Despite, you know, all the others starting from like whatever 63, 64. So it shows up first. So I had to like keep watching the regular episodes and be like, there's one where the sub is normally numbered, but the dub was the one labeled as a different episode number for whatever reason, like make sure I figure out and go back. Cause I started watching, it was like in the middle of some fight shit. And I was like, wait, where? I had to look it up and it's like, oh, this is like 10, 12 episodes into the season versus where it was at. So I had to pay special attention to that stuff. So, but other than that, no real issues. But yeah, this being the season of voting, a lot of the ads are about the issue one here in Ohio. Mm-hmm. For enshrining abortion rights in the Constitution, the state Constitution.
Yeah.
And getting lots of being like, this is too radical for Ohio.
Yeah.
And it's like, this shit's been radical since DeWine came into office.
Yeah. Also, wasn't there like a thing where like the guy purged like a bunch of people from the voting rolls before the early voting started?
I don't think so, but
I might be confusing that with something else, but yeah.
Yeah. As far as I know, everything's been normal.
Yeah.
Whatever that is.
Yeah.
Where you got the governor campaigning against this.
Yeah.
Acting like the people that are for abortion rights are too radical versus the guy who, you know, put in the most extreme abortion ban in the country at the time he came into office.
Yeah. So remind everybody like what exactly this vote is for, because it's a very like obviously it's about abortion rights, but what is it specifically?
It's to enshrine abortion rights into the state constitution so they cannot institute bans where essentially they have like the heartbeat bill kind of thing where it's like banning it 6 weeks before, you know, many women have realized they are missing periods and, you know, might be pregnant.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. And which what, I think is in effect right now.
Yeah. So what's like the voting, like it's still early voting, right?
Yeah.
All right. Have they said like what the polls look like so far?
No, I have not looked into that yet.
Yeah. Don't blame you.
Yeah. Cause it's like, I got better things to do, especially cause I'm still getting a bunch of flyers in the mail from people, sometimes multiple times from the same people.
Yeah.
And I just check, like, do they list Republican on it? It's like, okay, that's, I know that person not to vote for them.
Yeah.
That kind of fun thing. So yeah, I don't know if we have any early voting numbers yet on it. I could take a look real quick, but I don't think there's much yet. Yeah. This was just the previous vote.
Yeah.
I don't know what. Yeah. I don't know if there's any specific place for tracking and stuff just yet, especially this far out.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's that. And then there's issue two, which is for legalizing marijuana.
Yeah.
And so people seem pretty hopeful that both of those are going to pass.
Yeah.
That'd be a hell of a time.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with the way the Republicans are trying to fuck everything up, you know, making trying to not allow the actual language of the bill to be put on the ballot, you know, that kind of fun stuff. So yeah, that's that's that. But for things, other things I've been watching, I'm watching more Columbo,
mm-hmm.
Which is fun. No real notable actors in the episodes I've been seeing here.
Mm.
So that's good. But yeah, I think I've reached the seventh season, which is where they stopped being in the regular, like, Saturday evening TV movie thing. They would have rotating shows in there for that stuff. So that's going to be where we're at on that. So
mm-hmm.
kind of late Columbo stuff.
Yeah.
Which is a fun time he met. He had one with a famous author who wrote, you know, murder detective fiction stuff, mm-hmm. who set up her own killing.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. Locked a guy in a safe.
Yep.
And the reveal on that's pretty good. But, and she's like, well, if you were the one that was, you know, there for my niece's death, none of this would have probably happened.
Mm.
Because she seemed very upset that there was no great investigation to find out if her niece was killed or not.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah, Columbo was there. Probably would have came to some conclusion. So, yeah. And the other thing I watched is No Hard Feelings. This is on Netflix. This is the Jennifer Lawrence raunchy rom-com movie where she is, I don't know about hired, but she is given the opportunity to get a new car from this rich family whose son is kind of very insular, has not like had any girlfriends or anything.
Yeah.
Like potentially like to sleep with him to get him out of his shell kind of thing. And she finds it hard to do that. And yeah, she's very much a woman who has not treated sex as like a hugely like personal thing to do, like, you know, joking about like, oh, I needed somebody to hang out with for Christmas kind of thing, or, you know, to get a free meal kind of thing, that kind of thing. And it has actually a really good performance of a song where the kid does a piano version of Man Eater, to which it's like, it's really well done, and it shows like the ways that that song is taken by different people, mm-hmm. where, you know, as a kid, you probably thought it was about some weird man-eating monster thing, and which clearly he still thinks that, and she is sort of under the realization about being a woman who uses men for things, you know, destroys men's lives kind of thing.
Yeah.
It sort of comes to that realization where if you look it up, Hall & Oates, they're like, no, it's not about either of those things.
Mm.
They have their own reasoning for what the song is, but
yeah,
it's pretty well done. So yeah, it's pretty well done. There's a fun bit where they are skinny dipping in the ocean and some jerks steal their clothes and she goes running out of the ocean naked and starts beating them up.
Mm-hmm.
All that kind of fun stuff. So yeah, that's a movie that people should check out if you want something that's very ridiculous. So but let's see, that's it for things I've been watching. I've been playing more Euro Truck Simulator 2, doing some of the events. They also added a Halloween event called Halloween, for hauling trucks, you know. And yeah, they got trailers full of Halloween treats they want you to deliver to places. So that's fun. So now I'm working on two events at once with that, driving around. So I've been through Croatia, going to Zadar, Croatia, and Bihać in Bosnia and Herzegovina.
Yeah.
So I've been through those. And yeah, fun thing I didn't realize is like all the border checkpoints you go through here, which is not really too complicated here. You just, like a lot of other interactions, just pull up, hit a button. They're like checking your papers and you have no way of being like hauling anything illegal or anything. So
yeah,
it's just a matter of you wait like 5 seconds and they're like, all right, you're good. You just drive through.
I mean, you're going through former Yugoslavia, so there's going to be a crap ton of checkpoints everywhere.
Yeah. Though occasionally they ask you to go through the X-ray hall, where they have this big X-ray machine set up to like scan your trailer to make sure it's all in the good, which again, there's no way to do like illegal hauling in this game, so it's all a matter of just time. Though I think they asked me to do that once, and then the GPS did not like adjust itself, so I didn't know exactly where it was. So I just drove through the rest of the checkpoints, and it didn't like do anything about it. So it's like, maybe they should fix that kind of stuff.
Yeah. But
otherwise, it's fine. I could have. They're clearly not simulating the experience of like illegally breaking, you know, international laws and the border checkpoint stuff. So.
Yeah.
You're just hauling imaginary things in a trailer. It could be whatever. It just has special art on the outsides of the trailers when it's Halloween treats.
Yeah.
So that's fun. But yeah, that's that. No crashes or anything, so doing well this time. But yeah, there's that. Been playing more Spider-Man 2. As starting to get into the Craven the Hunter.
Yeah.
As Spider-Man's starting to figure out that there's something else going on here. There's this Craven guy that's hunting all the villains and such.
Yeah.
Here and trying to figure out what's all with that. So now that's unveiled all the bases they have cloaked around the city. Which I ran into one accidentally, like aggroed everybody and then just flew off and and came back as I realized what was going on. None of those are too hard, but that's a fun time. There's also a point where you can do some of these prime events, and the other Spider-Man shows up, helps you out.
Yeah.
I was taking on these flame cult guys and having a little bit of trouble, and then Miles comes flying in fighting dudes, and at the end we did the Spider-Man meme, the pointing meme thing, and then he said like, "All right, thanks for the help, you know, Miles," and he goes and camouflages and flies off. So that was fun.
Yeah,
I wasn't expecting that. So there you go. And I've also been playing more Rocket League, enjoying that. Finished up the Halloween event stuff. Got all that. So yeah, that's pretty much all I've been doing. So how about you, Pat?
Yeah, Pat. What about you?
I'm still on my little Akiba Games channel grind. I am still in what I would call the PC Engine TurboGrafx-16 arc of the channel, where I'm kind of focused on making content for that. The next video that I've got in the pipeline for it will be the top 10 games that you need to put on your TurboGrafx-16 mini when the hack finally goes public, which looks like it might be reasonably soon, finally, after literal years of it getting kicked down the road. And then the other one's going to be what I really think of the PC Engine / TurboGrafx-16 as a platform, because that's kind of a series of videos on my channel. I've done what I really think of the Nintendo 64, what I really think of the Sega Dreamcast, and so on and so forth. And that will be the next step for me, is the PC Engine and TurboGrafx, because it feels like that would just be a natural direction to go down, since I've been playing so much of it lately. Before I pivot toward Super Famicom content, which is, is going to be what's next. By the time I get done with all the PC Engine stuff, I'll have a decent selection of Super Famicom games. I've still got most of the stuff is in customs right now, and I'm just waiting for it to get across the U.S. to me. Because for some reason they went from Tokyo International to Queens, New York. So they kind of missed. Other than that, I'm just getting ready to get my paycheck on the 7th so I can do a video about import game hunting online from here in the U.S. Because I've been watching a lot of videos lately where American expat YouTubers will go around different shops in Japan, usually in Akihabara, but oftentimes they'll find their way out into the suburbs and find really good deals. And what I want to do is just kind of show people that you can have that kind of experience in the US digitally without breaking the bank.
Mm.
And obviously you're not going to get the same experience as actually being in the store and seeing everything and, you know, the sights and sounds of it. But if what you're trying to do is develop an import gaming library for yourself, there's really not much that you're missing out on by going to a good eBay shop. And there are a lot of good eBay shops I'm finding. Mm-hmm. And just sifting through what they have. The really good ones will have single listings that have multiple games on them. Mm-hmm. So you can just kind of sift through them and look and see what the games they have are like, what condition they're in, and so on and so forth, and place bulk orders, because there are a lot of shops. If you message the shopkeepers, they will tell you, like, yeah, we'll give you bulk shipping, we'll give you discounts for ordering a lot of games, you know, just let us know. And so I'm going to be doing a whole video of that where I show people this is how you go about buying import retro games online in a way that you're going to get a similar bargain that you would find going to a place like Hard Off or a Super Potato or mm-hmm. Surugaya, and, you know, just getting in on that import gaming experience from an angle that a lot of people over here probably aren't used to.
Mm.
And that's really what my channel's all about. Just making the import gaming world, from like every corner of the import gaming world, more accessible to people in North America, to people in Europe. Because that's something that I don't see a lot of YouTubers talking about.
Mm.
And it's gotten a lot better since the 90s, but there are still a lot of great games that you can only find in Japan or, you know, in Japanese region form. But so many of the barriers are being lifted from that you might as well go in and start buying into import games and seeing what's available, or at least checking it out on an emulator if that's your thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all of these barriers of entry that we used to have been removed. And that can be a little bit overwhelming in its own right, but if you can narrow down how you want to go about it and, you know, pick a single angle or maybe a couple of angles to go about it, that can be made really accessible. Yeah. And I think a lot of people just need help, whether it's getting past the perceptions about the language barrier on a lot of games, because a lot of those Japanese releases are actually in English, or at the very least, a lot of the Japanese is actually katakana. So when you learn to read the letters, it's in English.
Mm.
And yeah, I just want to make that easier for people. And I've got my work cut out for me, because that's a lot of content. But on the plus side, that's a lot of content. I can make so many different videos covering different ways you can get into import gaming and what's there to be found once you do.
Mm.
That it's like I said last week, I'm just absorbing the feeling of being able to do this for people and actually getting to work on getting the content out there. Because just the stuff that I've talked about in the last 5 minutes, I'm going to get months of content out of that. And mm. I'm just so looking forward to it. I can't even begin to describe it to you. But that's definitely what I've been up to.
All right. Well, as for me, I finished Omori. And God, that game gets dark towards the end. Like really, really dark. I'm talking like real life stuff dark. Like, the game has been, you know, more or less been highly suggesting up to this point that something pretty awful happened in the past. And, like, they kind of go ahead right off the bat and tell you what happened. At least, you know, like, what I guess what you would call the Volume 1 twist, whatever, is that, so in the headspace part of the game, one the way that you sort of save your game and, like, refill all your energy and health, if you need to, is Yura is Amori's big sister. Mary shows up and she's like, she has like this picnic blanket out, and there's like a picnic basket that you use to save your progress. And she's usually got some kind of food out that you'll use to refill all of your health and mana. When you go into the real world as Sunny, you find out like kind of why the reason Mary is like this sort of idealized individual. It's because she's dead. And she apparently died like 4 years ago. And because of that, Sunny has basically become like a hikikomori, and he hasn't like left his house in like 4 years. But by the time you get to the end of the game, you get more information on like the overall sort of the way the whole thing went down. And let's just say there's some like seriously dark twists and turns towards the end. I'm not going to spoil it, but I will say it is emotionally affecting. And it also ends on, I mean, what they call the golden ending basically ends on, I guess, is sort of like a cliffhanger. I mean, it ends the story completely. And, you know, it brings all the storylines to an end, but it ends it in such a way that there's like a bunch of like fanfic fuel afterwards.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's, you know, possible little thing. But yeah, so I finished that and I decided, you know what? I had been wanting to play this again for a while, but I had never gotten all the like DLC and other stuff that came with it. So I went on PSN and I bought Shovel Knight Treasure Trove, which is basically like the complete collection of, you know, the original Shovel Knight game and all the like additional sort of pseudo mini sequels, as well as, you know, the other stuff that came with it. And it's got a bunch of other features included, including in the main game where you can actually like gender swap the entire cast. And they actually like go through the effort of like changing the sprites and everything. So like, for example, King Knight becomes Queen Knight and has like this very fancy, like puffy gown and very obvious like armor cleavage and everything. yeah. And I had forgotten, first of all, just unbelievably how fun that game actually really is. Really, it is just an amazing bit of game design. It still is. It still holds up incredibly well. The other thing is, I also forgot how unbelievably difficult that game can get at certain parts. Because, holy crap, it does. And, you know, I'm excited to not only get through the first game, I'm excited to get through the DLC, because I've never played the DLC before. And I've only seen bits and pieces of it. So, yeah, I'm definitely excited to play it. Also, recently found out that Shovel Knight is apparently, like, canonically a fish person, which explains why he's able to, like, go underwater all the time and doesn't need oxygen. So, yeah, he's literally, like, one of the fish people that you'll occasionally come across in the game. But, yeah. So, yeah, that game is legitimately amazing. Heavily, if you have not played Shovel Knight before, get this version. It's basically got all of your Shovel Knight needs you could ever want, and it's just, it's an amazing game with a lot of replay value. So yeah, other than that, nothing much other than that, just the usual reading and stuff. Just sort of like what I said at the top of the show, Halloween is kind of, I like the idea of Halloween, but just out of curiosity, do kids still go trick-or-treating in your area where you live?
Yes, there's really no concept of stranger danger in Utah.
Well, I mean, it's Utah, so...
Yeah, exactly.
What about you, Chris, over in Ohio?
I'm sure it depends on the neighborhood. I don't really see anything here in an apartment complex.
Yeah, I don't think we've gotten any trick-or-treaters here in well over 15 years, so... Yeah, it's just like it's not a thing in my neighborhood anymore. Which kind of sucks because I think it's one of those like sort of like rites of passage that every kid should go through at least once. But at the same time, you know, the way our culture has gotten so unbelievably terrified of anything that's not immediately familiar, it just basically destroyed the holiday, you know, at least on the surface, because I'll tell you something, the candy companies still go all in on it every single year. But so that's basically what I got. You guys got anything else you want to add before we move on?
Nope.
Nothing really coming to mind.
Okay. Alrighty then. Well, in that case, it is now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. Now, I wanted to ask you guys, both of you guys, a question. Did y'all ever go to Chuck E. Cheese as a kid?
Didn't have one in Cache Valley.
Didn't. Don't blame you. What about you?
We had a much better place. I'll talk about that in a minute, though.
Yeah. What about you, Chris?
I don't think we ever had one.
Yeah. I went to Chuck E. Cheese once or twice when I was a kid. And then never again. And if you want to know why, it's because those animatronic things scared the ever-loving crap out of me. And it's also pretty much the reason why I can't play any Five Nights at Freddy's game, because those things tap into a very deep, terrifying phobia that I will never get rid of.
Yeah, at least you didn't go to the ones from the 70s.
Yeah, I was actually fixing to get that, because we're going to talk a little bit about the history of Chuck E. Cheese this week. Because Chuck E. Cheese has this absolutely fascinating history that I became just incredibly obsessed with after I watched a special little segment from Last Week Tonight that apparently was filmed a while ago that I never just encountered until this week. And just, yeah, let's just say Chuck E. Cheese has gone through some changes over the years, and some of them are, there's some real twists and turns to it. So, okay, so Pat, I have a feeling like what the other version that you're talking about was. You don't have to say it. I'll get to it.
No, it's not Showbiz Pizza.
Okay.
I saw the commercials for that because we had Showbiz Pizza advertised very aggressively in Utah back at that time.
Yeah.
But that's not what I'm talking about.
Okay, we'll get to it anyway. But anyway, okay, so Chuck E. Cheese. Now, just to sort of, for the few people who don't know what a Chuck E. Cheese is, or, you know, because, I mean, they've had some serious financial rough patches over the last few years. Chuck E. Cheese's sort of whole business model is it's a place where you can go to get, let's be honest here, below bar grade pizza, play arcade games, and then, you know, see these people wearing mascot costumes and this animatronic live show that is, for some people, magical, and for people like other people like me, deeply, deeply terrifying. The whole sort of franchise is centered around a rat character. Well, he's not a rat anymore. He's a mouse now. Named Chuck E. Cheese, who also has his friends. You know, there's Mr. Munch, the purple alien. There's the dog who's all like country bumpkin and stuff. There's the chef, Mr. Pasquale, who is, as John Oliver said, offensively Italian. and basically a very, very almost copyright-breaking copy of Mario. you know, there's a bunch of other characters, too, that they sort of went in and out over the years. But that's more or less the main ones. I know there's, like, a chicken as well. I forget what her name is. The original company was started all the way back in the 70s by one Nolan Bushnell, who you may remember as the founder of Atari, which, you know, made games like Pong, Asteroids, and then like a shit ton of other Pong-related games, and eventually the Atari 2600. And the whole concept was exactly like you said. You know, it was a place where they could have their games that they produced in a single location, where they could get a bunch of money from it. They could feed kids, you know, below-grade cheese pizza, because they don't really care, it's just pizza, and have funny characters. Now, here's the thing about the original Chuck E. Cheese. When we think of the modern Chuck E. Cheese, you know, obviously, like, in the modern day era, they don't have animatronics anymore. The animatronics more or less got phased out a few years ago. But originally, they started out with animatronics. And for the time, they were fairly advanced. Now, unlike the animatronics as we know that we would know and, in my case, be afraid of, these original animatronics were, like, stuck in, like, picture frames from, like, the waist up. And there was, like, all these, you know, characters, the original Chuck E. Cheese himself, who had, like, a Jersey accent and was smoking a cigar. There was the dog who was, you know, plucking at his banjo and, you know, being the typical idiot. Sometimes he was accompanied by waving Confederate flags because, you know, the 70s. There was another character, I think her name was Helga Hippo, who was like a torch song singing lounge singer girl who would flirt with customers for a quarter. And whenever she hit high notes, her animatronic breasts would jiggle up and down. And the best part was Chuck E. Cheese himself was basically like an insult comic for kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, he would basically rag on just about anybody that was in the audience. And especially his fellow cast members. And it was a huge success. Like, it was an immediate success. The novelty was there. Kids loved the pizza. Adults went there because, you know, it was one of those things where it's like, yeah, it's fun for kids, but the adults can have fun too. Because, you know, again, 70s. And it was hit. It was a big hit. But here's the thing. Whenever there's a success, there's always competitors that come in. And there were a bunch of competitors that came in. And Pat, I know you had one. What was the competitor that you...
It wasn't really a competitor. It was just kind of what we had instead. Because Chuck E. Cheese, as Chuck E. Cheese, wasn't in my area at all.
Yeah.
So we did... you get down closer to Salt Lake, you did have what you're about to talk about, Showbiz Pizza.
Yeah.
But what I had was a... It was a local place only. Like, there was only the one location here in Logan, and it was like two blocks from my house, mm-hmm. called the Center Street Pizza Palace.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. Like, it was definitely more of an arcade than a pizza joint, even though the pizza was magnificent. It was also kind of overpriced.
Yeah.
But the real reason people went there was to play fighting games. Mm. At one point, they had five Street Fighter II Champion Edition cabinets. Mm-hmm. It was two blocks from the high school as well as my place, so
yeah.
We would get like 30 or 40 people there on a weeknight to play Street Fighter.
Yeah,
it was
where in Utah was this located at? Was it Logan, Utah?
It was Logan, yes.
I think it might still be there.
The building is still there, but it's Great Harvest Bread now.
Oh, okay.
But this place was only around until like 94. Mm-hmm. It was 91 to 94 that it was the Center Street Pizza Palace, but it's so goated that, like, I still keep a prize redemption ticket from it in my wallet to this day.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, you know, old stomping grounds.
Yeah. So yeah, you had stuff like that. You also had places like Panda Pizza, which was like the ratty ass version that showed up.
That might have been a regional thing, too, because I've never heard of that.
Yeah, it was. I'm pretty sure it had, like, only, like, one or two locations. Because it was, like, just a place that had, you know, pizza and video games, and there was a dude wearing a panda suit. but, Pat said, the big competitor and ultimately successful competitor was Showbiz Pizza. And Showbiz Pizza had a bunch of things going for it that made it, honestly, better than Chucky. And it was... For one thing,
they were pretty shameless, though. Like, they bit off their ad campaign wholeheartedly.
Oh, yes, they did. And they also had some other things, like they had more video games. Apparently, pizza was slightly better. But the biggest attraction was the fact that they had more advanced animatronics for their live show. Whereas, like I said, the ones at Chuck E. Cheese, all the animatronics were, like, stuck in, like, a picture frame and were very stiff. The ones that they had for Showbiz Pizza were full body. And they had, like, more characters up there at a time. And it was just a more advanced operation overall. And obviously, competition was very furious. And ultimately, what happened is Chuck E. Cheese ended up having to file for bankruptcy. And Showbiz Pizza's parent company bought out Chuck E. Cheese. So it ends up being that the Chuck E. Cheese that you probably remember and love is actually originally Showbiz Pizza that was bought up by their parent company. But see here,
so wait, are you telling me that that Showbiz Pizza didn't bite off the "Where a Kid Can Be a Kid" jingle?
Nope.
And instead, passed it down to Chuck E. Cheese when they bought him out.
Yep, that's exactly.
I was
what
today
happened.
Years old when I learned that.
Oh, and it gets better. You're probably wondering, okay, so Showbiz Pizza, why did they stop using the Showbiz Pizza name and the Showbiz Pizza characters? Well, it's because the guy who designed the animatronics, he ended up leaving the company, but he actually owned the copyright for all of his creations when he left, which means that the parent company now had to rebrand themselves, the original Showbiz Pizza, into Chuck E. Cheese and retrofit all the animatronics with the Chuck E. Cheese characters.
I'll be damned.
And yeah, here's the funny thing. There are a bunch of like collectors of like the old Showbiz Pizza stuff. For those who don't remember, the house band, quote unquote, for the Showbiz Pizza was the Rockafire Explosion, which was this, like I said, it was a much more advanced live animatronic. There was like a banjo playing bear. There was a gorilla that played piano. There was like this other bear who was like a cheerleader and all this stuff, a lot of stuff. And, you know, what typically happens when these animatronics are let go is they end up going into, like, used tech specialty stores and stuff. And there's been a handful of people who really loved that stuff when they were a kid, and so they grew up and became engineers, and their hobbies were they would buy up, you know, the pieces of the Rockafire Explosion they could find and restore them. And there's this very famous,
I don't like where this is going.
There's this famous viral video a few years ago that came about of a guy who had managed to restore an entire version of the Rockafire Explosion, and then he managed to program it to play Usher's "Up in This Club," "Love in This Club," which is like one of the dirtiest songs ever.
Yeah.
Recorded. And it's hilarious.
See, I would have gone with "Tipsy."
Yeah. And it like made the Rockafire Explosion sort of this kind of meme thing, and it started showing up at like, you know, on like music award shows and stuff. And there's this the John Oliver one talks about when they showed up during one of CeeLo Green's tours, when it was happening while he was in the middle of his trouble.
I love it.
Yeah, I'll let anybody who wants to go watch that whole special, because it's hilarious. I'm only going to be giving you the surface sort of story here. So anyway, what happened? Well, okay, so they ended up, you know, putting together the new Chuck E. Cheese as we know it with the old advanced electronics, and now like the full band as we know it complete. And that, I mean, if you're like an 80s, mid to late 80s to 90s kid, that is the Chuck E. Cheese that you remember. With the full animatronic band, the people rocking around in the mascot suits, the big arcade, pizza, all that stuff. Oh, and the fights. Yeah. Should we talk about the fights? Because holy crap, there are a lot of fights in Chuck E. Cheese's. And you know what? It didn't used to be that bad, but...
Well, I remember at the Pizza Palace, like, beatdowns did get administered from time to time when... Yeah. People felt some type of way about how you were playing Street Fighter, but...
Well, I'm not talking about just your standard, like, arcade brawl. I'm talking about full-on freaking riots.
Oh, yes.
Where they have to call out the entire emergency squad. You know, ambulances, police cars, fire, the works.
I'm intrigued.
Yeah, okay, so... As everybody pretty much knows, the arcade industry basically started to die in the late 90s. More or less. And... Like, arcades aren't dead completely. Arcades are still a thing. They're more of a niche market now, but they still exist. But they used to be
it's
like...
It's kind of disturbing as some of the ones that are closing in Japan, though, I'll admit.
Yeah. But the thing is because the arcade business started to go down, it meant that they weren't really making arcade machines for current or next-gen games anymore. You know, because remember, when we were growing up, that was where all started. You know, originally appeared. They show up in the arcades, and eventually they would get the console adaptation.
Yeah,
right?
You'd get like a bastardized console version.
Yeah. Well, that, like I said, that business model basically died like around 98. And eventually, you know, when streaming started, it was just It just died. So basically all the, you know, with a handful of exceptions, most of the modern art of the old, like, arcade game machines you'll come into are like old vintage models that are like been restored.
Yes.
So what ended up coming in to replace them? Ticket games.
Yep.
Which basically meant that it turned what was formerly a video arcade into basically a kiddie casino.
Yeah.
And that's basically what your modern Chuck E. Cheese is now. It's a kiddie casino where everybody's trying to get as many tickets as they can so they can get the big prizes, which means the parents get pissed off, which means that people start beating the hell out of each other. But, yeah, so obviously Chuck E. Cheese had to change its business model a bit, and it still managed to putter around for a little longer. But by, I think it was like around 2015, they started phasing out the animatronics and replacing them with, you know, just the costume mascots for the live show, which is a little better, you know. But, you know, customer demand was sort of in a decline, and eventually they had to file for bankruptcy again. And as everybody can probably guess, what was it that finally did them in? Take a wild guess. It was COVID.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm actually surprised they lasted that long.
Yeah. And so so they still technically kind of functioned under COVID. It's just they closed the arcade portions, but they kept the kitchen portion open, and they opened ghost restaurants. Yeah, this is a funny little story. So during the COVID epidemic, they kept the kitchens running because, you know, they still had to get revenue somehow. And
DoorDash is a thing, so yeah.
Yeah, so they started operating under the name Pasquale's Pizza and Wings. Remember, I mentioned the Pasquale character. He's the guy, like the pizza chef guy, plays the drums, is basically a giant Italian chef, Italian stereotype in a chef's hat. Yeah.
Straight up caricature.
Yeah, and also this was like, I forgot to mention, they'd also like rebranded by this time as well, because they had like changed Chuck E. Cheese from like a rat into like a mouse. And he was like, he wore like a t-shirt and like JNCO jeans and like Doc Martens and had like a guitar and doing like a pop punk thing. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. So basically they got bought up by another. Basically, Chuck E. Cheese is back more or less, but they're still like in the middle of their sort of, I guess, reopening phase. There's like 5 test locations out that are doing, I guess, okay. And in the meantime, they went into another market. Frozen pizza. Yes, there is Chuck E. Cheese. I mean, frozen pizza.
That is a way that can get to the rough quality of their actual pizza.
Yeah. And see, I know this because we got a bunch of grocery store I work at. And they sell. So they're doing something right, I guess. But yeah, that was Chuck E. Cheese, the rise, the fall, and I guess kind of rise again and then fall again and maybe rise again. I don't know. Honestly, I have no idea how this company has managed to survive as it has. But yeah, that was Chuck E. Cheese, and that has been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid. And if you're wondering why I decided to do this week, it's because the Five Nights at Freddy movie came out this week.
And she's actually where Teresa is right now.
Yes, she. If you're wondering why she's not on the show, her and her family are watching the Five Nights at Freddy's movie at the theater right now. Much like with the Super Mario Brothers movie, the critics seem to hate it, but the audiences seem to love it. So, yeah. All right, so with that, it's now time to move on to the show proper. And as always with the show proper, we start off with our assholes of the week. And our big, massive asshole of the week is this one dipshit in Maine. He was a certified firearms instructor in U.S. Army and apparently a paranoid schizophrenic who heard voices, who went ahead and shot and killed 18 people and wounded 13 in a mass shooting in Lewiston, Maine. With apparently a legally purchased sniper rifle. He was on the loose for 2 days. It caused the entire town to go in lockdown, and eventually they found him dead from a gunshot wound to the head. Suicide. Yeah.
Those words, though, legally purchased sniper rifle.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's sad because he, you know, voluntarily went to get mental health treatment, that kind of thing. And at no point in that process are like his guns taken away or, you know, rights to buy guns for X amount of time or whatever. Because I think it was during the summer they had figured out. But yeah, shot a bunch of people at a bowling alley and restaurant. You know, got about 31 people total, only 18 dead so far. I don't know if anybody's on in critical condition or anything, but yeah, they searched for a couple of days there and eventually found him, his body. Found notes that I guess he expected to die in a gun, you know, a gunfight or something with the cops. Found notes about that stuff. So yeah, asshole, unfortunately, doesn't really pay for his crimes.
No. And as usual, what happens when we have a shooting, we go through the same damn cycle again. No, no, it's too early to politicize, blah, blah, blah. You know how it goes.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll get to that story as we find out more about it. Next up, the House GOP finally found a House Speaker and a just a one, for, first of all, the most generically named human being ever.
Oh, he's extremely white.
Yeah, Mike Johnson from Louisiana.
Yeah.
Who is a Christian fundamentalist who was also active in trying to overturn the election in 2020.
Yep.
He's basically the absolute, just the stereotypical that you can imagine. He's a young Earth creationist. He thinks dinosaurs were on Noah's Ark.
My God.
Yeah, I saw somebody describe him as Stephen Colbert's character, but not
real. You know,
but real.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like Stephen Colbert's character of a right-wing pundit came to life and somehow became Speaker of the House.
Yeah.
Ugh. Yikes.
Because he did a thing on, I don't know which network, but he was talking about, like, oh, getting asked about his views on certain issues.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh, what do you say? Well, go pick up a Bible off your shelf and read it. That's my worldview.
Ugh. Yeah. Somebody should sort of flip through that and ask him some questions. Yeah.
Yeah.
That'll be a very uncomfortable moment.
What about this guy that helps the less fortunate, help feed them and all that without making demands of them?
See, funny thing is, weirdly enough, he was actually like pretty, as far as like racism and racial discrimination issues go, he's actually pretty good on that subject. And for that reason, there is a segment of the GOP that does not like him. So,
yeah.
Yeah. but yeah, so he's there.
I don't know if you saw a lot of the GOP being like, oh, these 3 weeks, you know, nothing bad happened. It's just how it goes. And it's like, no, that's not really how it ever goes.
No.
It shows the dysfunction of you guys.
Mm-hmm.
What else? They had the presentation, like press briefing thing, and somebody asked about his views on, I forget what it was. Oh yeah, the 2020 election, and they all started booing.
Mm-hmm.
And this old woman was like, shut up.
Yeah, it turns out, I think her name is Virginia Fox, and she's from
Alabama. Yeah, she's a person of note in Congress, so.
Mm-hmm.
It's great to have them being that openly hostile against the press.
Yeah. And last but not least, Israel has officially begun invading the Gaza Strip.
Yeah. They're going to, under the guise of going after Hamas, like, kill as many people as they can.
Yeah, and I've also heard tale that they've started seeing tanks going into the West Bank as well. So, yeah.
Yeah. They shut off the internet, water. Like, if you didn't know, Israel controls all of Palestinians access to those kind of necessities.
Mm-hmm.
And they shut all that off. And I guess Elon saw an opportunity to make money. It's like, what if we get Starlink involved in there?
Mm-hmm.
For what are verified, you know, aid groups kind of thing. And Israel doesn't like that.
No.
They're like, we're going to fight this too. This, I was like, man, two assholes fighting. That's, I don't have to take sides on this.
No. Whoever wins, we all lose.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or the Gaza people lose.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, not really much good in any of this. Just they're going to continue doing their thing.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, all their allies are supporting it.
Yeah.
So they're like the one reliable ally that anybody in, you know, any of the major powers has in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a bad situation to be in.
Yeah. But it's not all bad because we actually do have a week. And the hero of the week this week, Supreme Court of the Nation of Japan, ruled that compulsory sterilization surgery for those seeking to legally change their gender is unconstitutional.
Yeah, they're slowly getting better on LGBTQ stuff.
Yeah.
Not making huge changes, but this is a big deal. Yeah.
For Japan, it's a big deal, considering how change there basically goes at a snail's pace.
Yeah, as the old people hold on to their power.
Yeah.
And the young people that, much like in, you know, other places in Asia, are ready to embrace all of this and have to do so in somewhat secrecy in Japan.
Yeah.
Or at least happy that this is happening. So great news as they get on a more similar page to the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And you just know that there's a certain section of the weeaboo losing their damn mind right now. It's like, no, my beloved Japan, my beloved Nihon.
Yeah, and the one of the main guys on Persona series.
Yeah. He
loves to dip into that shit in the worst way in every game. So
yeah. But next up, we got some unfortunate deaths to discuss. First and foremost, rest in peace, Bobby. Who is Bobby? Bobby was the world's oldest dog, and they were 31 years old when they died. That is,
bruh.
Yeah, that is extremely unusual for dogs. Dogs at most have like a 15-year lifespan at the absolute maximum.
Yeah. We talked about this dog earlier this year as they broke the record for oldest dog that had stood for almost 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, managed to keep going for a good bit longer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, lived to 31 years and 165 days old.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, purebred Rafero do Alentejo livestock guard dog.
Mm-hmm.
Normally has a life expectancy of 12 to 14 years.
Yeah.
So yeah, the oldest hound in recorded history.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go.
Supposedly his mother lived to be 18 years old, which seems to suggest maybe it also has something to do with genetics as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's happy and amazing. But, you know, all dogs have to go one day, so. And sadly, this one, which literally just happened like about an hour or so ago before we started. R.I.P. Matthew Perry, famously the actor for Friends and a bunch of other things. He passed away what appears to have been an accidental drowning.
Yeah, in a hot tub, which is...
That one came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
No sign of foul play or drugs on the scene, so
mm-hmm.
hopefully nothing bad there to add to it. But
mm-hmm.
yeah, prolific actor on Friends and did a bunch of other stuff as well.
Yeah.
Was even in Fallout New Vegas as one of the big bad guys in there.
Yeah. He's literally the guy that shoots you in the head at the beginning of the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, very young to go.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. And they only recently did like the Friends reunion. So
yeah.
Ugh. Yeah. Anyway. All right. So with that, moving on to the main story of the night. Mike Pence has officially aborted his presidential campaign early before the primary season. That is not shocking.
Yeah, he should have been forced to carry to term. Yeah. Unsurprisingly, his campaign never gained any real traction.
Yeah.
Because he's a very milquetoast person that, you know, all of the Trump base hates.
And he also just doesn't really have anything close to a charisma, like, at all.
Closest he's got is when he was like a shock jock radio dude talking, you know, all the greatest hits of right-wing radio talk stuff.
Yeah.
In Indiana, which,
mm-hmm.
you know, is exactly where you go for nobody to hear anything you say.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, good riddance to this guy, but they'll all slowly fall off here before Trump takes it all.
Yeah. And then probably lose again.
Yeah.
Because apparently these people just can't get in their heads that people don't like them. They just don't. I mean, forget all the other shit. People just don't like him.
Yeah.
And the ones that do are deluded in thinking that everyone else does.
Yeah, that they're the... Not the silent majority, because they don't shut up. The loud majority, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so... Next story is from out of my state of Georgia. A federal judge has ordered my state of Georgia congressional and state legislative maps because we got shit incredibly gerrymandered down here.
Yeah. And a 516-page order released on Thursday, U.S. District Court Judge Steve Jones wrote that the current political maps drawn by Republican lawmakers after last census violate the Federal Voting Rights Act by diluting the voting power of black voters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is an Obama judge, in case you're wondering.
Mm-hmm.
Ordered them to redraw the maps by December 8th.
Yeah.
And yeah, a bunch of civil rights and religious organizations challenged the maps, so...
Mm-hmm. All right. And
yeah, that's a big deal because black residents have been a big part of the reason that both senators are on the Democrat side.
Yeah. Basically, it's the reason why the state is purple right now.
Yeah.
Or technically blue. It depends.
Yeah. Governor stuff is a whole other ball of wax.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, Kemp shouldn't be the governor because he ruled over that... that election of his own race, which should not be legal.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah. So that has happened. Next up. Okay. So you guys remember that Robert statue, the big one where he was like on a horse? I think was he on a horse? He was on a horse, wasn't he? It was at the center of the whole like Charlottesville thing.
Yeah, there was a whole thing about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That whole, the reason that whole like quote unquote rally was founded because there was talk that they were going to take it down, so they ended up having this giant just flustercuck of all the terrible people you can think of. It was like all the groups, the freaking, you know, the neo-confederates, the neo-Nazis, the Klan, the 4chan a-holes were there,
the khaki brigade,
yeah, the Proud Boys, the guys from the Traditionalist Workers Party, those a-holes, the National Socialist Movement, all those guys sort of coalesced around that area. And by the end of it, I think two people were dead and a bunch of people were injured.
I think it was one woman.
Well, no, there was also the guy that died in the crash, which is slightly unrelated, but it's considered related by legally. Anyway, the point is, it was a massive disaster. It basically was more or less like helped kill the the sort of ascendancy of that fringe political movement, more or less, at least in public. And well, this week they finally destroyed the statue. All the metal that was used to make it was melted down, and it will be used for another newer projects. There's this really good photograph of like the head as it's descending into the molten metal. Like, looking like the Terminator at the end of Judgment Day.
And they had to send it to a foundry in secret, you know, like public announcement, because they didn't want
anybody to try it. Yeah.
You know, send them a bunch of death threats and all that. Luckily that'll be, been melted down. It'll be turned into a new public art statue.
Yeah.
Piece there. So be used for something good, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, people even still recently were trying to stop this legally.
Oh, yeah.
To contest it for some reason other than just pure bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Even saw people on Twitter being like, I'm a descendant of Robert E. Lee and this offends me. And it's like, man, fuck off.
Yeah.
He was an asshole.
Yeah. And funny enough, they're going against his own wishes because Lee himself did not want any statues of him made.
Yeah. He didn't want to be a martyr.
Yeah. Anyway. That little bit is over more or less. Next up, the United Auto Workers and Ford Motor Company have reached a tentative agreement as the first major breakthrough in the auto strike. And it also looks like they might be getting ready to make a deal with Stellantis at the same time.
Yeah. Get those two of the big three done, at least tentative deals, so they'll have to get voted on by the union members for that. They still have one that they're ramping up on GM. They're the last of the big three. So we'll see if that's if they get a deal there too. But the Ford one looks to be a very good deal. Supposedly like a 33% raise over the next few years, among many other concessions they got that all looks like a huge win for them. So that seems like that should go into effect. I don't know what the Stellantis one does. It probably has similar things there, but yeah, like Ford recently was complaining, like, we've lost so much money. It's like, there's an easy way to solve that problem.
Yeah.
Organize.
It's like you come to the table and put down, you know, actual, good terms.
Yeah. Yeah. So next up, Scholastic Book Fairs. Did you guys have book fairs at school?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I definitely did.
That's where I got Animorphs every so often.
Yeah, I got some of the original, they weren't official Nintendo novelizations, but they were obviously based on Nintendo games. Yeah, I got those.
Yeah. Like that and Goosebumps and stuff like that.
Yeah, I also got the one that was like based on the Sonic the Hedgehog Saturday morning cartoon.
All right, just what you want, the novelization of a Saturday morning cartoon.
Hey, I had trouble reading when I was younger.
Just saying that's it's a wild thing.
Yeah.
When the cartoon's not enough for you.
Well, I could only watch it, you know, once a week, if that. Yeah. You know, remember,
that's part of why the comics were so hype.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, well, Scholastic Book Fairs, they had been, as everybody knows, there's been, you know, controversy and attempted book bans of various books for reasons that are incredibly stupid for me to get into. But the point is, Scholastic had made this sort of idea known that they were going to, quote-unquote, separate some of these controversial books on controversial topics into, like, their own specific section. Which automatically rankled people because what does it sound like? Like, think about this for like 5 seconds and see why this might be an issue.
Yeah. Giving in to these people.
Yeah. So they apologize and have backtracked on it.
Yeah, especially because a lot of the book ban stuff comes from like very few people.
Yeah, it's like one reports. Organization.
It's like double digit amount of people making the vast majority of requests for books to be removed.
Yeah.
And yeah, Scholastic, you know, kowtowing to this.
Mm-hmm.
Like I could see the thinking to like make it easier for schools to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Like I can get it, but also it's like you of all, you know, groups should be fighting this more than anybody else.
Absolutely.
Because this is your business.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
You know, we've had those kind of books for
ever, you
know, since we were kids.
Yeah, we had them when I was a kid.
Literally, we were brought up with all the, you know, treat everyone with respect and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And we turned out to be, you know, liberals now.
Yeah, which is which is why they have that problem. Yep.
Yeah. Because now people started learning more and more like, oh, I'm not feeling like, you know, all the movies and such are saying maybe I'm, you know, gay or whatever.
Yep.
And that'll, you know, we're the generation that stopped saying gay in place of stupid.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of stuff. And yeah, it's Scholastic company should be fighting that stuff as much as they can.
Yeah.
And luckily they've caved to the criticism that they got and have said that they are, you know, going to work to, you know, right those wrongs and mm-hmm. help fight and do all that kind of stuff. So yeah, that's good. They shouldn't have done it in the first place, but it seems like they are going to do the right thing now.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, there's that. And now we got just another one of those really stupid controversies. The National Hockey League has officially lifted their ban on Pride tape after a player defied it.
Which is a great ban when one player defies it and you're like, okay, we'll stop this.
Yeah.
It shows how
Prince. You already knew this was a stupid idea, so why'd you go through?
Yeah.
It's them trying to hold to, I don't like some sort of standard, but it's like one of those things like the NHL gets or NFL gets a lot of flack because they have like uniform regulations. And when people want to, you know, do, you know, stickers or, you know, any sort of tags to honor, you know, players that died or anything like that, they have to go through like legal approval processes and all that. That's like, you're just corporatizing all this shit in a way that's dumb, which is why it's fun when like the MLB and NBA and all that kind of have their, and NFL does it too, like the chance that players get to get like specially made shoes and such to go for their causes that they support, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, as the NHL, like you're a league that has literal problems with diversity.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting better, but still there's a lot of issues when black players do come into the league and have to deal with a lot of shit because there's a lot of history in that league of not having, you know, much variety of players there and thoughts and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, luckily a lot of that they are getting better, but it's like a sort of thing where, like, you would have hoped like the best players in the league would have come out with the pride tape to show how stupid this is.
Yeah. Unfortunately, and I only recently, well, relatively recently figured this out, hockey seems to have more of a conservative core to it than other sports. Probably because of sort of the small town appeal that a lot of it has.
And a lot of players coming from, you know,
small towns,
Europe and Russia and all that, where that stuff's not a thing people talk about as much as what they do here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's like F1 had a lot of problems with that, where they, in the wake of like COVID and all that, had the George Floyd stuff, like tried to have whole things about, you know, standing against race. And a lot of the racers didn't really understand it because they're, you know, white privileged guys who haven't had to deal with any diversity, you know, any adversity or anything like that, that, you know, has affected them. So
Well, I think a good chunk of the National Hockey League is still rural Canadian. in Origins. Yeah. So,
yeah, you got a lot of players that haven't had to confront any of that stuff.
Yeah.
At least to this kind of problem.
A lot of cases where I've discovered that players that I really looked up to growing up turned out to be kind of shitty in terms of their beliefs. And
yeah,
I hate to say it. It's just something you kind of get numb to as a hockey fan, but thankfully we do have this, at least one example of a player who's going to stand up to it, and it got results. So I'm happy about that, but there's definitely a lot more improvement that needs to be done. And hopefully as this next, you know, more younger generations of players start coming up through the draft and through junior, we'll start to see a lot more of this.
Mm. Yeah.
But I think, I also think as easily as the NHL caved on this, it isn't something that the corporate entity that is the NHL really felt that strongly about to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It seems like some weird bureaucratic thing versus anything really caring about the issues behind it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, that is who Gary Bettman is as a person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's why he gets booed every time he comes out in the public.
Yeah.
Well, there are other reasons for that, but yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Next up in stupid sports shit, Michigan State apologized for featuring Hitler in a quiz during its football game last Saturday. Now, this story actually has like a second layer of stupid underneath it, because it turns out not only did they do that, but they weren't even using like their own content. They were actually more or less pirating stuff from a YouTube channel called the Quiz Channel.
Yeah. It went through like multiple layers of approval to do this thing. And then,
yeah,
I feel like this is going to be a lot to unpack.
Yeah. Yeah. They're facing Michigan. So big rivalry game.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this was during halftime or something. They were like putting up, you know, trivia stuff on the big screen, and you know all that. And I guess they took it from a YouTube page called the Quiz Channel.
Yeah,
that the creator had no clue they were even doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Which shows you how much approval this went through, probably internally, but not like contacting them to be like, hey, is it okay if we do this? You know, maybe we'll pay you, X amount of money or whatever for it.
Yeah.
The person said, to be clear, I was unaware Michigan State University is using my content for stadium entertainment. This was unsolicited, unauthorized use.
Mm-hmm.
Random history trivia question in an inappropriate setting. Because this is, again, while the Israel Hamas stuff is going on.
Yep.
They're from a big Hitler thing. Because somebody took a screenshot of it, picture of it, like, oh, here's Hitler on the big screen at Michigan State game.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, oh, this is great. This is totally normal.
Mm-hmm.
Which he said, they had this question on with his picture on there about 18 seconds.
Yep.
I was like, nobody watched this enough to be like, hey, maybe we should cut out the Hitler thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no. So, yeah.
Mm.
There you go. It's I guess the Board of Trustees was outraged by this. That's not great.
Yeah.
Those people help fund the whole thing they're doing there. So that's not what you want, to anger them.
Oh, yeah.
Amongst everybody else, the Jewish community and anybody with a sense of decency. So, yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So, yeah, that happened. Now for the entertainment portion of the show, we start this story. As of this week's, Taylor Swift is now officially a billionaire.
And now she's evil.
Yeah. And at least for right now, she's more than likely going to start giving a bunch of this cash away for charity. That concert movie she made has been raking in some serious cash.
Yeah, I think it had at least $100 million when it opened.
Yep.
And the concert itself is doing great. The Eras Tour has earned over $700 million in ticket sales, not even counting merch or anything. And, you know, she's putting out her, re-releasing her albums as a Taylor's version.
Yeah.
Which is making lots of money there, too. So,
yeah,
this has all been pretty fast.
There's going to be a lot of Swifties are going to be surprised to find out that she started out as a country music singer.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Started as a teenager, so.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, you know, you got to give it to her, considering, you know, unlike a lot of pop stars, she actually, like, writes all of her own material. So.
Yeah, and she didn't have, like, famous relatives in the industry that helped her get to where she is. She kind of just got discovered as like a teenager and, you know, from there got help, but she got to where she was on her own talent.
So yeah, that's good for her, I guess. I just hope she knows what she's going to do with that money. Anyway,
donate to the good political causes like she likes to do.
She's been encouraging people to get out to vote. And, of course, all the usual suspects hate her for that.
She doesn't seem like the type to let anyone take advantage of her in that money.
No. Might not be the same for, like, personal relationships, but that's a completely different story.
Yeah.
That's the thing that's always a minefield for people of a certain level of fame.
Yeah. But anyway. Next up, Apple TV Plus is officially rated free to $9.99 per month, along with an annual price increase.
Yeah, it was $6.99 previously, and the annual price was just 10 times that, so $69 a month now is going to be $99. Or not $69 a year to $99 per year. But yeah, I guess existing subscribers will get their increase 30 days later on their next month. So yeah, this has risen fairly quickly. It used to be $5 a month.
Yeah.
When it launched in 2019, they last year raised it to $6.99 a month. So yeah, they're doing like everybody else, raising the rates.
Yep.
As they're investing more into it. So, yeah. There you go.
Mm-hmm. And now we got some film-related stuff. The Looney Tunes are going to be returning to movie theaters in The Day the Earth Blew Up.
Yeah. Like the official title's The Day the Earth Blew Up, a Looney Tunes movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is going through GFM Animation.
Mm-hmm.
That is launching it, this Warner Brothers animation produced feature. So I don't know. Let's see. It might be October 31st and November 5th. They're doing a theater run or something. It's actually still in production. I don't know what the date they have here is, but I guess it'll be next year, next springish, Q2 2024, spring summerish.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
That looks like it should be pretty neat. It's been a while since we had one of these that wasn't like half and half live action and animation.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was going to say it's in Space Jam, but I was like, that's half live action. Yeah. So that doesn't count either.
Yeah. And finally, remember the story you've been hearing about how Netflix was going to make a game show based around Squid Game? Well, we got the trailer for it now. It's called Squid Game The Challenge. You can see it on YouTube.
Yeah. Looks like it'll be at least like a fun little show, but you know, people are like, oh, I'd rather have season two. It's like, this is way easier to make than a season two.
Yeah.
But they are working on season two, which is probably next year. But yeah, this is out November 22nd, so you can see a bunch of dumb people. Probably the sort of people like, oh, if I had done it, I'd have won.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, yeah, sure.
Time to find out.
Yeah.
So they do show the red light, green light game with the big giant doll that shoots everybody.
Yep.
I assume it just shoots them with paintballs.
Yeah. Wish it shot him with like a taser or something. That would, I don't know. That's just my.
That would be a lot of them.
Yeah.
Hundreds of people.
Yeah. That'd be good TV. Yeah, that'd be the dark part of my imagination. They try to complete that had happened, there'd definitely be troubles, and then Netflix would try to bury this thing like CBS tried to bury Kid Nation.
Yeah, I want to say there was some controversy in the production of this.
Gee, I wonder why.
Yeah.
Some
people getting hurt or something. I don't know what it was, but
Pat, I don't think you were on the show when we talked about Kid Nation. Kid Nation was this reality show that came out in like 2005. And the idea was that they planted like a bunch of kids, like age like 8 to 15, in this like what they called Bonanza City, New Mexico. It was like supposed to be like an old frontier town that had been abandoned. And they basically made the kids like try and rebuild their own society there. They made them have. Oh, yeah. Like, obviously, you know, there were camera people around and everything, and they had people to make sure they were hydrated. But other than that, like, they barely fed them. The kids had to, like, make their own food. They had to clean their own dishes. For, like, the first few days, they only had one outhouse that they could use. And keep in mind, there was 40 kids there. And, like, they gave them, like, these crappy little mats. And like these thin blankets, and remember this is New Mexico, so it's the desert. The thing only lasted for one season, and then CBS did everything they could to bury it because they got sued a couple of times, as you can imagine.
You think?
Oh yeah, a couple of kids accidentally drank bleach. One girl accidentally burned herself with cooking oil. Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
And you cannot watch this thing legally anywhere.
So it was a full season of reckless endangerment.
The guy who was like the producer when he pitched it to people, he literally set out somewhat resemble Lord of the Flies. So
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
So that's not a concept that like the studios are afraid of because they do it every so often. It's like, oh, what if you were in an actual zombie apocalypse or, you know.
Yeah.
Or what if you were like pretending like you're on a new planet and setting up a new civilization.
The only big difference is that in that case, they use an adult.
Yeah. It's like there is less legal challenges to that.
But just in case, Pat, if you're interested, JonTron did like two videos specifically about the subject. One about the show and one he actually managed to get a hold of one of the cast members and interview them.
Oh, man.
Yeah. If you want to watch it. Both. They're amazing.
It has to be majestic in its shit showness.
Yeah, it is. Let's just say that JonTron himself visibly upset at some parts. But yeah. So I do believe we've got ourselves a show, folks.
We do.
Yeah, we do. So I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you've got a comment or something you want us to read on the air, you can get in touch with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got it for you on the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, or pretty much any kind of, any kind of podcast aggregation that you can find. If you liked what you heard and you wanted to share it with friends, please do not hesitate. Your friends, your casual acquaintances, your mortal enemies, family members, your distant relatives, basically just anybody that you can come in contact with. We're not particularly picky. But, yeah. We're going to go ahead and wind it down. Thank you for joining us. If you're going to be going trick-or-treating next week, or your kids will be, please be careful. If you're going to one of those adult costume parties that, you know, a lot of Halloween has morphed into, please drink responsibly. Join us again next week where we will have a bunch more stuff for you. And, you know, once you're, mostly once after you've gotten coma, because let's be honest, at our age, eating that much candy is just not good for you. Good night, everybody.